And welcome to another episode of Deal Talk. I'm Deal. Let's talk. My guest of the evening is a multi-talented entrepreneur, from podcasting to real estate to helping others go through addiction and overcome addiction. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Donna Marston. Welcome to the show. How are you?
Great. How are you?
I'm good. I'm good. Looking forward to have this amazing conversation. I've been researching, following you, just learning what you do, and you really are doing some incredible stuff.
Thank you. Yeah, and thank you so much for having me on your show. I really appreciate it.
It's truly an honor. So, like, where do we start? Because you're doing so much, from podcasting to real estate to really putting yourself out there and helping others, educate them, but also being that that strong person besides them to educate them on either family, friends, or just going through drug struggles.
Mm-hmm. Right. So, you know, basically what I've done is I've taken what once was my mess, and I made it my message. So I have a son who's a person in long-term recovery. And what that means is he hasn't used any mind-altering substances since May 11, 2008. And he's also an entrepreneur, very successful in life, and he's a miracle. And so when I found out that my son was addicted, it just rocked my world. My boys are my everything. And I went to bed for about 6 months when nobody was looking. I'd get my other son off to school, my husband out the door to work, and I'd die from my bed. And I had a broken heart, and you know, in the fetal position, and that lasted for about 6 months. You know, the should'ves, the could'ves, the would'ves. What did I do wrong? Did I love him differently? You know, what was that all about? And I realized, like, it wasn't my fault. I didn't inject heroin into his arms, and I didn't crush oxy so he could snort them. I didn't cause this. But I also realized I had a secret. Mm. And back then, you know, he used for about 10 years. He's been in recovery for 16. So late 1990s into the 2000s, you didn't talk about it like you do now. It was so stigmatized.
Yeah.
And, you know, and how I profiled people when I think back was horrible, horrible. So through all of my pain, I just evolved. I got to a point. So the first 5 years I suspected something was going on. I couldn't figure it out. 15 to 20. 20, he admitted part of it, but not all of it. And that took me to my knees. I got to a point 2 years before my son found his sobriety. Somebody gave me a book, Asking It is Given, by Esther and Jerry Hicks. And I couldn't get through it. And so they said, well, go look at page 36. And when I did, it was an emotional scale. And I saw that I was the bottom. I was number 22. I was full of despair, grief. I was depressed. I was a mess. And I'm not usually that type of person. I usually don't have mental health issues. So it rocked me. It woke me up, like just snap out of it. And at that point, I started to do a little bit at a time, writing a gratitude journal, how grateful I get to breathe. Like, you know, it was little things initially, and then I'd start really feeling the gratitude. And it just went on a journey. And there's nothing worse than a pissed off mother, right? We're going to get stuff done.
Yes.
You're going to mess with my baby boy.
Yes. Yes. Yes.
So it just took on a life of its own. I never expected to do the work that I'm doing. You know, back then, I was a real estate agent and became a broker. And I made a name for myself, and I slowly evolved. And then I started writing books, and which isn't my forte. I mean, it's not something I had planned. They came through me, like spiritually connected. And so I've written four books, It just, and so now I do coaching, and I used to have my page used to be called Peeling the Onion, and now it's called Sharing Without Shame, which that's what we do. We share without shame because I don't have to hide my secret anymore because we get a sick, we're as sick as our secrets.
I respect that and admire that. I commend you for being a badass and taking things into, because that's what parents do. I can't really speak too much on it on air, but I do comprehend what you're going through and the struggles you have gone through, deeply. So you've been able to do all that, but also become that person to help others, because that's a lot to handle. That's a lot to endure. And not a lot of people have the resilience or the strength to buckle up and say, oh, it's going, we got this,
Yeah, buckle up, buttercup, because here we go. It wasn't easy, and it took a long time to do what I've accomplished and do it in a way that when I work with parents and other family members to teach them not to be ashamed. And one of the key things, and I think this is a really important point, when we love a child or a family member or a friend, whatever, who's in active addiction or alcoholism, we're told we're codependent and we're enablers. And I don't like that because they're shaming and blaming us for loving our children and whoever the person is who has a substance use disorder. And nobody should be guilted because they love somebody. Because we love the person that we know, not their disease, right? And so I think it's important. So I don't use that language. I don't call people, I hate the A words, addict and alcoholic. I teach the parents, your child has a name, your loved one has a name. Call them by name. You see the person first and then their addiction. It's a brain disease. It affects their brain. My son's brain is wired differently than mine. That makes sense. So I teach parents all about this stuff and so that they can move forward and not feeling shame or being caught up in the stigma of it and being able to love their children with healthy boundaries and taking care of ourselves, which is really, really important because when I was sick and suffering, because my son was sick and suffering, when he would come out of treatment, I was still having my behaviors and I was toxic to his recovery. And so it took me many years to realize I'm part of the problem. The work I do is very different because I inadvertently teach parents and loved ones not to be part of the problem and how to do that and how to be in a relationship, even though the person is unhealthy, figure out a way, and I help them figure out a way to have a relationship with them that they don't get caught up in the chaos and the drama, if that makes sense.
No, it does. It's difficult because, parents without knowing become the problem because they're so focused on trying to help, right? Not realizing that while they're helping, they're making it worse. They're contributing to that trauma or whatever that person's going through. I gave an advice one time to somebody close to me that was going through a similar situation, and that person was always getting hurt. The parent was always getting hurt because, the child would tell them, I'm doing this, I'm doing this, I'm doing this, but there was never any proof. It's just me telling you. And she would get hurt because she wanted to believe.
Sure, absolutely.
And that belief, it was just a disillusion. So my advice with that person was, you have to start believing in actions rather than words. when you start seeing it.
Absolutely. Yeah, because when someone's an active addiction, typically when their mouths are going, when they're talking, there's not a, they're not always being truthful.
They're telling you what you want to hear.
And in my case, I'll talk, I refer to it as me, but is that my son's addiction was the puppet master, and my heart is what he pulled the strings on.
Yes. Perfect analogy. Perfect. Perfect. What I find it ironic in addiction is that, we can say these th therapists and we'll say whatever they say, right? That the person, but it's also the system. If you look at today's articles and documentaries that have been published out, they put it so that it is addictive. I'm not sure that
Well,
making sense.
they don't want to talk about the miracles and the people that are doing well. They want to show you with somebody with a needle hanging out of their arms. They want to show you the negative part of it, but people do recover.
Yeah, they overcome, yes.
And they're beautiful people.
Yes.
I think this is my own thinking. Is that I think a lot of people who have a substance use disorder are impasse or empathic, which means they're highly sensitive, and that's why they self-medicate because life is tough, especially men or boys, because I grew up in the baby boomers. Men don't cry, boys don't cry, toughen up. I think that's getting better. But I think that's why it's really hard. My son's a very sensitive person. He's an empath, and he was bullied in sixth grade,
And that's good. That's
and that
okay.
was, yeah, and that was the demise. And by the grace of God, he's sober today and very spiritually connected, and just pretty amazing. But yeah.
Yeah. Well, when I was a kid, I grew up in and I was born here, but I grew up in Puerto Rico in an island with my grandparents, and they owned the bar. And within that bar, I saw a lot of things that a child hasn't seen. So being around addicts, that I have this certain ideology belief when it comes, and I'm always crucifying judge. Because I don't drink, I don't smoke. And if I do drink, I drink in my house, in my corner, very private. But I understand what they've gone through. It can, and some can easily fall into the addiction just by having a drink for the first time. Others just fueled with trauma.
Absolutely.
And all for season, but I say this, negative events throughout their life. So we don't really know what's, despite of the analytics and information, like it can happen to anybody.
Well, and the thing is, most like my son or anybody who has a substance use disorder, they don't know that. They're like the last one to find out.
Yes.
Because the way I describe it is we're all born with this baby tiger cub in our, it's a newborn cub, and here's my beautiful boy, and here's the tiger cub. It's asleep. Because it's in the DNA in my husband's family. And so my son starts to experiment at an adolescent, and the tiger wakes up. And the more he drinks or smokes cannabis or does whatever, the tiger becomes in charge, and my son is lost in the bowels of his addiction. And you can fight with him and tell him all kinds of stuff, but what I learned the hard way was I'm fighting with his addiction, not my beautiful boy.
Yes.
I had to wait to see glimpses of him, which I would see on occasion. And figuring all that out, it's really hard because we're grieving our children, our loved ones who are still alive. We're
Yes.
mourning. We're in mourning. There's so much pain that goes with it. And how do we keep our heads above water? How do we, I took a 6 month leave of absence from real estate because I just couldn't function. And but people have to show up and go to work.
Yeah,
And then, there's
that's very
people who have
true.
multiple children, and they go to work, and they just work through it. God bless them. I don't know how they do it.
Yeah, they become, in a sense, stoic people. And where, they look normal, they appear normal, like nothing's happening, but inside they're going through so much turmoil. And it's hard. It's hard.
And it comes out in ways whether, they're short with people or, they might hit people. It shows up. It all comes out one way or the other until you recognize what's going on. And then you have the opportunity to do some healing.
Yeah, and it takes time. It takes
A
time and
lot of time.
dedication. It's something you throughout time, you have to nurture it, because it's not easy. When I was a child, I grew up in, and so many addicts, and where that I had that sliver to fall in it too. And I don't know what was it about me, growing up, going to see my dad in prison, going to see my stepdad in prison, moving to Puerto Rico, growing up in a bar with so many alcoholics, and seeing friends and family members slowly deteriorate because of drugs, then seeing them on the corner looking like they're about to fall, but they don't fall. I remember I used to have to wake up at I waked up at 4:30 in the morning to be around 5:15, maybe 5:20 to take the bus. And there was a bus stop in front of my grandparents' store, in which I had to go without them knowing, very carefully remove needles and put them inside a bottle of, I think, a Heineken, inside a bottle of Heineken, so it doesn't demoralize my grandparents' store. But also, there's a lot of little kids around, and you never know, and remove them because the addicts would just leave them there. But it's a journey within itself, and it's difficult. And if you
I wouldn't
wanted,
wish it on anybody.
you can,
There's a lot of suffering.
yeah.
But resources, there's a lot more resources now too. So, there's recovery community centers that are available that people who want to doesn't they don't have to be in recovery when they go, but just to have the desire. It's like going to an AA or an NA meeting. You have to have the desire, right? So there's recovery community centers that are throughout the I live in New Hampshire, so they're out throughout New Hampshire, and they offer all kinds of resources, and you can go in and talk to a recovery coach or a CRSW, and some of them have a blast. One of the centers here, they have a talent show once a month on a Friday night. A lot of people find out how talented they are when they are in recovery, that they didn't know they were artistic or could write beautiful poetry or could play the guitar. There's just so many things that when they open up to going to these places that they realize, wow, I'm talented, or it's really special. And they get to meet people who know what it feels like to be them,
They're talented.
go
They
through these struggles.
realize the self-love, because a lot of them do not haven't developed that self-love.
Well, that's part of the problem, right? It's that disconnection. Often people in active addiction, and when I say addiction, I mean alcoholism, street drugs, prescribed meds. I put it all under the category of addiction. But it's typically because they don't love themselves, and whether they were deprived love or whatever it is, it's that lack of it. And then, hopefully, in time, they learn to love themselves, and so then they can move forward, live in a healthy, happy life.
Yeah, I remember I used to work security. Oh man, it was over 10 years ago. I used to work. I was working at supervisor security in this condominium, right, place, and there was this gentleman who his parents lived in the building, and he didn't live in the building, but he was a severe drug addict,
I
And
just.
he will always try to go up, get into the house, steal some stuff to go buy. And a couple of times I stopped him. The last time I stopped him, he spat on me.
Oh.
And I it like it got real ugly. The cops had to come and take him away. And then I want to say like a year later, I'm sitting outside in front of my apartment I used to rent, right? And I'm sitting outside, it's a summer day, and I see him pass by. And I see him like I don't think he noticed me at first. And I'm like, damn, look at him. He was clean, he was chubby, he was glowing.
Yeah.
And he passed by and then he like walked back and was like, Deal, is that you? And I was like, hey man, how are you? And he's like, he started sobbing and he hugged me. He hugged me and said he was so sorry for just everything.
Yeah, he was making amends.
And next thing you know, a couple of minutes later, he made this beautiful chick and he got married, I think, and had kids and bada bing, bada boom.
Yeah, the miracles.
Yeah, it was
Yeah, they happen
beautiful.
all the time. You know, it's such a beautiful thing, and you know, it's crazy. You know, it's so sad, and yet, I mean, so many blessings can come out of all of this, and but you have to it just putting one foot in front of the other and making it happen. Fine, you know, there's many pathways to recovery. And some people never go to treatment. Some people go to treatment. Some people do it through religion. You know, some people do it through psychedelics. I mean, there's all kinds of stuff.
Yeah. Well, one of the great things is that that helped you develop this thing you're doing and where now you reach out and you help families. How do you like how does this how does it work and when like somebody reaches you, how does that work?
So I have a website, www.sharingwithoutshame.com, and they can go on there and schedule a time with me. I usually do an hour at a time. They can email me at Donna and then the number 4 support at comcast.net. And we can, you know, I'll do a discovery call, like a 30-minute free call with them
Yeah.
to see if they like what I have to offer, if I'm a good fit. You
Yeah.
know, and they can order my books. I have books on Amazon, Sharing Without Shame, Healing Without Shame, which is a journal that goes with Sharing Without Shame, but you don't have to buy them together. My first book was Peeling the Onion, and then Just for Today was my second book, then my last two. So there's 4 books.
Yeah.
They all tell you a little, especially my last one, you know, my Sharing Without Shame book. This one is, it's kind of a little chicken soup for the soul. And so there's 6 people, including myself, that parents who talk about how they navigated through their child's active addiction. And then I have 6 people who are in recovery from a substance, whether it's alcohol or drugs, and they talk about their pathway to recovery. So, you know, it gives both sides. And then there's information about, you know, boundaries or the drama triangle that we all get caught up in. And you know, I talk about I don't know, the cycle of addiction. And those are the things that I teach the parents. I have workshops, but I publicly speak if people wanted somebody to come and speak about what it feels like, or the knowledge that I have, I do that as well. So, but they can get, you know, they can just reach out, and we'll make it happen.
Nice. Was it tough writing these books, putting your you because it's almost like you're reliving it, you know?
I'll tell you a funny story. So when I wrote my first book, Peeling the Onion. I had a house up in the White Mountains, and I'd go up there, and I'd wait for everybody to go to bed, and I would just kind of let things happen organically. And after I thought, you know, the manuscript was done, and I showed it to my son, who's the person who's in recovery. And he looked at it, he said, "Who do you think's going to read this?" And I ripped it up and I threw it away. And about a month later, I was speaking at a local hospital, and this woman said, "You ought to write a book." And I said, "You know, I did, but I ripped up the manuscript." But funny how spirit works, or your higher power, whatever you choose to call it. Months later, I was doing some stuff on my computer, cleaning it up, you know, getting rid of documents, and what shows up but the manuscript of Peeling the Onion. And I was like, well, that's a sign that I am supposed to get this published. But when I
Yes.
read it, I realized it was wrong. It was the war story of my son's addiction. And that's not my story to tell. So I rewrote it and I wrote my story, what it feels like, what it felt like back then, and the tools that I used to get better. So that was the first book. The second book, just for today, I had a Facebook page called Peeling the Onion. And every day I wrote it just for today. And unbeknownst to me, all of a sudden I have like 14,000 followers. And I'm
Wow.
not even trying.
Wow.
And so I thought, geez, maybe I should write these down for the next year. So that's what I did. And I ended up with a book just for today. This last book, you know, I had no intentions of writing another book because that's just not my thing. At least I didn't think it was. And it just organically happened. And you know, there's a lot of really good information in it. And I'm a journaler. I love journaling. So I decided, oh, I'll make a journal that goes with it. If people want to really work on themselves and getting better, this could be a great tool for them to utilize with the book. So it just all happened when it was supposed to be. None of it was planned. None of it
Just happened.
just happened.
This happened.
Isn't that what the way it's supposed to be, right?
Yeah, it just happened. Because ironically, when you try to plan things out, it never goes as you plan as you planned it out.
It gets messy.
Yeah, and you got to constantly readjust and readjust, see and readjust. So like, some things you gotta like, we'll see.
Yeah. You get all those roadblocks. I had one roadblock, my son, with peeling the onion, and I got over that hurdle.
Yeah, which is the most important part.
Right? Yeah. Yeah, it just, you know, it's just funny how things happened. I was invited by the state, people that work for the state, to go on a mission, a recovery mission in Vermont at Knoll Farm. And I was the only mother there. And we all made a decision to bring something back to our state. And I made a promise to everybody that I would start family support. And for over 12 years, I ran Family Sharing Without Shame in the state of New Hampshire. And I had two
Wow.
meetings a week. And I had really high attendance. And I was the first person to have Narcan training for families. I was part of that, you
Wow.
know, as an advocate at the state level, trying to, you know, help get things done too. So, you know, it's like, that's not my MO. I'm usually pretty shy. Would never put myself out there, but I did. It just, there's, I found my voice and my passion through my son's addiction.
Isn't that the crazy part?
Right?
Yeah.
Like, how crazy is that? And it just took on a life of its own. And you know, it keeps ebbing and flowing.
Yeah. Has he been able to understand what you're doing, the things you're doing, the people you're helping, the lives you're changing?
He does. I don't talk about it really. You know, I just do it. You know, he does his thing, I do my thing, and I don't know, I just don't talk about it.
Yeah, I respect that. I mean, how would you know? Like, it's such a tedious conversation or topic. It could go either way.
Yeah, and I think too, when somebody's in recovery, there's a lot of guilt they carry, you know. And I don't know, would that bring up a feeling would that, I don't know. So I just never did. And not because I thought of it that way. I just never did. I just moved forward doing what I do, and I think he admires it. I think, when I was invited to Knoll Farm, he said, "Mom, I wouldn't dare go any place like that. That takes a lot of courage to go there all by yourself and you don't know anybody and you're in a different state." And I don't go camping. And I was camping in a tent that had holes in it. In the woods. I don't go out in the woods. Yeah, so it was very challenging, but it was a wonderful situation. But something I never would have done had my son not gone through what he went through.
No, in a sense, you became fearless. I mean, the worst possible thing for a parent to go through, you went through it.
Yeah, and I learned the hard way, and I think this is really important for parents and loved ones to know. I learned the hard way that I couldn't love my son into recovery.
That's deep.
How about that?
It's only until one reaches rock bottom that has to realize what is
Yeah.
what, in a sense.
And I like to say they're enough. When they hit their enough, they're ready to move forward and ask for help. It's just like I had to hit my enough and start to take care of me and start to get better.
Yeah, because it's a toll, it's a toll. You trying to love somebody with all your heart, and it's killing you because it's he that person's hurting themselves.
Yeah, and you can't save them. You can't rescue somebody who doesn't want to be rescued. And they're so sick, they're so into their addiction, it's so hard. And then just how do you move forward, loving them enough to let them go?
And that's
Yeah.
true love. That's real love.
Yeah, and that's takes it takes a long time. Some of the parents that would come to my groups, they lost their homes. I had a mother commit suicide. I mean,
Jeez.
there's a lot. I ended up with post-traumatic stress disorder. And there's a real thing called broken heart syndrome. I mean, I could literally feel my heart breaking. There were days I thought I was going to die of a broken heart or I was going to end up in a psych unit. And I didn't,
Yeah.
but I certainly felt it. It just, I wouldn't wish it on anybody. But beautiful things can come out of it. I can tell you that, my son's friends that are, they're all in recovery, they're all entrepreneurs. They're all doing amazing things, and you just see that their growth and their love for each other, and it's a beautiful thing. I
Yeah.
think, if you're going through this, it's always hold on to your hope because you never know when the miracle's going to happen.
Yes. Yes, I agree 100%. I look back growing up watching all my friends go through what they went through. And there's some of them that overcame that, are better now than what they were before, and for me, it was always like it's always been about accepting, like that, that phrase, accepting things you cannot change. And back then when I was younger, I didn't know what that phrase was.
Oh, the Serenity Prayer?
All I knew was, that's what it is. You got to accept it, and you got to move on, and if it's that goes back to if it's meant to be love, it'll come back to you. And watching them grow now and have their families, and it's beautiful. Like you said, it's a miracle can happen.
Yeah, you just never know. Yeah, so it's God grant me the serenity to accept the things that I cannot change, the courage to change the things that I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
Yes.
And then there's another piece to it, but I don't know that piece.
What how long you been doing the podcast?
So I started it a few years ago, and it was called Addiction in My Family, and things. I'm technically challenged, and the person I had that was doing my editing got a job. So I just kind of let it go. I just figured, you know what, maybe it's not meant to be. And I don't know, just a little while ago, I thought, I need to start this up because there's so many people and parents and family members that are hurting. And if I can be that voice that reaches them and teach them, you know, about living agreements and the drama triangle of the cycle of addiction, and that recovery doesn't happen like this, that it's a 10 plus year process. And there's stages that our loved ones have to go through. And so I just decided to go back at it and change the name to Sharing Without Shame, because that's what we do. We share our message without shame. And I'm not ashamed that my son was addicted at one point. He was an IV heroin user. But I'm very, you know, I'm very proud of him. And I wouldn't change anything over these last, what, 20 years or more, because I became a better person. All because of his addiction, I became a better person. And so did he.
That's the most important part.
Yeah. Yeah, beautiful things can come out of bad situations. A friend once said to me, a curse can, how does it go? Oh, there's a saying about it being a curse. I forget it, but if it comes to me, I'll let you know.
I look at things like when it rains over here, like it rains over here and it's like, oh my God, it's raining. Like, oh my God, it's raining, right? But when I look at it, like there's still things you can do. Like, have you, like, I often ask this question, like, have you been through a hurricane, you know, category 5, you know, have you been through those things? Because it's only when you go through things that's so difficult and you're there for quite some time and you just keep going and going and you're used to that. The weight starts to get lighter. And when you look at things, it's not that serious. But you have to go through, you know, my metaphor is a hurricane, right? But you got to go through those obstacles, those challenges. You got to go through that pain, because truly with pain and failures, is that what we learn?
It's how we grow.
Exactly. That's how we improve. If we don't go through that, you know, if we don't go, it's like you working out every day. If you don't go through that torture, in a sense, you know, when you look at Shift the Mirror, you're able to see that satisfaction of what you've been building for, you know, so you got to go through it.
Right.
And, you know, some are not willing to yet go through that. But once you go through that, not everything, it's so tedious. You know, like I look at you, you're peace, you're calm. But to get to that moment in time, you got to go through so much BS to get to peace. You get what I'm saying?
Yeah, and I think too, what happens, you know, at least for me, you know, is that it took me on this journey of healing that I never could have imagined. And I'm a work in progress. I'm still, you know, I still do that. And through all of this, I became an energy healer. I ended up becoming a Reiki master.
Nice. And I know a couple of Reiki masters.
That was the start of my healing. I went and had Reiki, and it was like, oh, my heart felt lighter. I laughed that day. I couldn't even have told you the last time I had laughed, and it lightened my heart. And I was like, I need more of this.
Yeah.
And that was how I started my process. And I found this woman who took me through, and I became a Reiki master. And, you know, I add that into my coaching when people, I have an office at my house. And so if they come here, you know, they sit on a chakra mat. And it has all the crystals. It has like, I don't know, 60 crystals in it. excuse me, of all your chakras, which is part of your balancing, right? If you, everything's balanced, if you feel like you're out of whack, it's because one of your chakras is off. That's your energy field along your spine. So I started doing that, and I do ear therapy where I don't do that. I stopped doing acupuncture because you bleed a lot with the ear, but so I use magnets and ear magnets and ear seeds. And it's amazing when I have a mother come in and so stressed out, and I'll just say, "Do you mind if I just put these on? No one's going to see them because they're the color of your skin." And they zen out. They just zen out, and it's like, that's cool.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's awesome. It's always good to create that good energy. We need more of that, you know? Me more of energy, wisdom. Life is too, it's too over dramatic sometimes. We need
Too much.
that good place and where the energy is good and we can just go and decompress our air, you know, something like that. So that's kudos to you for doing that. That's awesome.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah, you know, it's fun. I like it. I have like a little altar that I have here, and you know, I work with angels. You know, people will think, "Oh, she's crazy." But you know, if that's what I do, it's part of my healing. It's part of how I express with the parents I work with. If they're not into that, then we don't talk about that stuff. If they are, you know, then we incorporate that into their healing process.
Yeah. I mean, the most important part is just having that support. I think, you know, in this new age we're in, I think everybody says it, but they're not really doing it, you know? And
Yeah.
that's, you know, whatever, whether it's Reiki, whatever you put in your books, you know, giving you a book so they can read and educate, whatever you do, support, it's key, whatever you do.
And you know, it's baby steps. To get to where I am today, I mean, it's been years, and it was a little bit out of time, and there was never an agenda. It just happened. And I made a decision. Do I move forward with this, or do I ignore what's in front of me? And like I said, I mean, this has taken on a life of its own. I could never have planned this out. I would have made a mess of it if I planned it.
Not just that, just because you're so it wouldn't be so it would be unsatisfying, right? Because you're trying to push yourself to do so and accomplish things that like most likely you'll get there and you won't be able to feel that gratification that oh, I'm finally here, you know? You
Yeah,
kind of
then you
won't
don't
even
want
re yeah. Like what's this?
I worked this hard for this, and yeah, I don't think I want
For this feeling, what is this? What is this? I get that a lot. I get that a lot when I do this, when I do other things, and we're like, so you just gotta let it be, let it run its course. Like everything else, you know, it's like you're in water. You're not gonna go against the waves, against the current. At some point, you gotta just flow with it, and always expecting the worst, but hoping for the best.
Yeah, I got tired of being thrown against the rocks. So
Yeah. Yeah. Yes, 100%. Yes.
trying to go upstream, right?
Yeah.
It's all going the other way. Yeah.
You'll get there one way or the other. But
Yeah, and again, it just takes time, and I think we all have to be patient with ourselves, no matter what we do, whether it's this work or, you know, what you do or real estate or whatever. It's really just being kind and loving to ourselves and to all the people around us, and you know, just keep the peace.
yeah, I think it's also like one thing I miss deeply, right? Growing up because I grew up with my grandparents, is that I used to sit there and just, you know, listen to them. And, you know, they had these meaningful conversations. And here in this modern day, I'm not sure it's because I grew up with my grandparents, my state of thinking mind is different than the regular person. But here's like, you know, we have these talks or these conversation that are filled with these useless dialogues of what,
Nowadays, you're
yeah,
talking.
or, yeah, like, what's trending on social media, or this reel, or this meme. Like, there's no, sense of value. And that's fine. Want to chop it up, talk about something silly, and get the move. I get, I'm all for it. But then what happens with the, then,
Yeah, it all changes over the generations. I'm a baby boomer. And we were brought up every Sunday you went to your grandparents' house, had dinner with your aunts and your uncles and your cousins, and there was no sports going on. And then when I had my children in the 80s, and as they became, got a little older, that's when sports started to be on a Sunday and started to take away from family time. And then it just evolved, and people don't get together like the way you grew up or the way I grew up. It's really sad because we have wisdom, us old people, and our grandparents, and we have stories we'll gladly tell you that are funny and interesting, but like no one wants to hear it anymore.
I worked for like 7 months. I worked for what do you call this? Oh my God, I forgot the name. A retired home. And
Assisted living or
assisted living, yes. They had a lot in one. And you had these people like Grammy Award winners, baseball Hall of Famers, multi-millionaires there, like all these people. That I remember this couple that in where you lived, you could buy a house in the property. And then as things get, get older, they start moving you. And you see this couple, they rent it. They're from Ireland. They were from Ireland. And they went to Africa, they went to London, they went to the States. They went to, you look at their, they had this amazing wall. That's another thing. People don't have a wall of pictures anymore, just documenting their times of happiness, of joy, right? And they had all this life, this journey, and to end up in New Jersey, right? It was just remarkable. And I used to sit here and used to talk to them, and just hear them out, because there's stories. There's there, rather than hearing the same BS you hear in the city talking about pop culture, ignoring everything else that's important, right? I miss that. I'm not gonna lie to you, I miss that. I you know, my father-in-law, he, oh my God, he talks so much. But when he talks, and when he's telling you a story of when he was upbringing, or the things he'd gone through, it's like I in tune with him, because he's telling it with so much conviction. Like at some point it gets emotional for him because he went through that. And that's the human connection we're lacking in today's day.
Absolutely. And that's another reason why people self-medicate.
Yeah. We my opinion, right? It's like we're trying to hide from what real life is. And real life is hard, it's difficult, but it's also beautiful. It's also breathtaking.
Well, it's, I think social media has changed so much. When I grew up, we didn't have cell phones. I was attached to the wall. And the whole family's there listening to, when you're a teenager trying to sneak out or whatever you're doing. It's just all so different now. I mean, I have grandchildren, and my little, 6-year-old, and even before he was six, and 4-year-old. They know how to use a cell phone and an
A
iPad.
tablet and all this crap, right?
Yeah, like I struggle, but that's not what I grew up with. We grew up with relationships, and I think unfortunately the younger generations, they'll be next to each other text messaging instead of having a conversation, right? It's just so it's just all so different.
I grew up, listen, I grew up and we're like, I would take off my shoes and just go running in the rain. with my friends. We played hide and go seek, we played tags. And when it's time to go to bed, try to go home, my grandma will yell my name, hey, right back home, take a shower, go to sleep for school, you know? And I never took that for granted. I never took that for granted. Like something within me always told me, some point this is gonna end. And as much as difficult it was at times, moments like those, it was the best of my time of my life.
Yeah, because you could go out and play. I mean, kids today, they don't go out and play like they used to, right? It's hard. And now, I grew up, and I'm not sure what I'm suspecting you're probably in the 80s.
Me, I'm
80,
born
80.
89, 89.
Yeah, and it's like as the generations have gone on, both parents had to go to work. I was lucky to be a stay-at-home mom.
Yeah.
You sacrificed,
Yes.
right? But now everybody has to work in order to be able to survive, which makes it tough.
Yeah, this the
And that creates a lot of emotions, and it can create different
disconnection.
feelings of disconnection, and that's the thing about recovery. It's all about connection, and how do we get that back?
Yes. And hopefully they'll give you a
For
call.
yeah for what's that?
Hopefully they'll give you a call and you can help them
Yeah,
walk them through them stages.
that would be awesome. I'm ready.
One last question before we go, right? So
Okay.
I'm gonna paint you a scenario. If you had to give one word advice to somebody that's going through the early stages of what you went through and just struggling, what words of encouragement will you give them?
Hold on to your hope. Remember to breathe because we hold our breath. I used to catch myself holding my breath. And there's always a solution. I one of the things we used to at the end of my meetings, it was the Serenity Prayer. But it always ended with after the Serenity Prayer, I put my hand in yours so together we can do what you no longer have to do alone. So I put my hand out. They want to reach out and take it, I'm there to help them. It's all about choices. There's always a way to get through it, and that's what I do. I help people navigate through the struggles and the chaos of when they love somebody in active addiction. I never want anybody to feel like I felt. I was emotionally and financially depleted. And if I can teach people now what I know to be true, and using kind language and teaching in a loving way, so they never have to go through what I went through, it might save them a lot of money, because I was paying off drug dealers, I was treatment facilities, just it was crazy, and I caused some financial situations because of it. So I just don't want anyone to ever have to go through that. So, I'm here to help. Just have to send an email, go to my website, whatever. But yeah, I always have my hand out.
That's the most important part. Can you give us your website, your social media, whatever you have, so they can research and
Yeah,
find
so
you?
so it's www.sharingwithoutshame.com, and I have a Facebook page which is also Sharing Without Shame. Oh, I also have a free family group called Family Sharing Without Shame. It's all on my website, and they can email me at Donna Donna the number 4 support SUPPORT at Comcast.net. I'm not, I do a little bit on TikTok, but that's not my jam. Oh, it's like I don't put myself out there. I do it in a different way, but The best way is really emailing me or through my website.
Boom, there you have it, ladies and gentlemen. Donna, it's been an honor speaking to you.
It's
Thank
my
you for so
pleasure.
much. Thank you for the conversation, and keep on being a warrior.
Thank you. Thank you. This has been wonderful. Thank you.
Thank you. Make sure to go follow me on Instagram at Mr.JimmysPrivateIn. Go like and subscribe our YouTube channel, Deal Talk TV. Go check out all the latest episodes of Deal Talk, and go buy my merch. Have a good night, guys. I'm out.